This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers.
Hey, everybody, it's Jessica. Welcome to this week's episode of Passing Judgment. This week, I talk to Megan Leibowitz, and we talk about all things related to the beginning of the second Trump administration. And she helps walk us through the executive orders, what they mean, what they might mean, what they don't mean. I found it to be very helpful in organizing my thoughts. But before I get to that conversation, I did want to quickly answer some legal questions about birthright citizenship, because I've been asked about this so much over the last week. So we're talking, of course, about Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, and I'm going to quote here. It says, quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, comma, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, period, end of quote. So why are we talking about this? Because President Trump is essentially trying to end birthright citizenship via executive order. And the first thing I want to say is that you cannot executive order your way out of the Constitution. There's a hierarchy of laws in our country. The Constitution stands at the top. Then it's things like legislation. Under that, we have executive orders. So if there is an executive order that is in conflict with the Constitution, we know what happens. The Constitution wins. The second thing I want to say is I think the great weight of authority indicates that this executive order is in conflict with the Constitution. Let's remember that the 14th Amendment was put in our Constitution after the Civil War, and it was really meant to say to people whose parents were previously slaves or who were previously slaves themselves and were born on American soil, it doesn't matter what status your parents have. It doesn't matter if you were previously a slave. It matters if you were born in this country. It doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. If you were born in this country, you are an American citizen, period, full stop. Now, there has been some academic debate, I will say, about whether or not that specific clause and subject to the jurisdiction thereof might give the Trump administration some wiggle room to say that if you are the child of people who are not in this country legally, then you do not obtain birthright citizenship. I will say that this, in my view, goes against the plain reading of the 14th Amendment, of the history and tradition, how we have interpreted the 14th Amendment. And it goes against a Supreme Court case back from the late 1800s, which I read and many, many others read as saying that if you're born in this country, again, it doesn't matter what status your parents have, then you obtain full citizenship. And that is so-called birthright citizenship. Now, the executive order that President Trump issues has, of course, been challenged, and there so far has been one judge who was appointed by President Reagan who looked at this issue, and he said in court that this is, quote, looks, quote, blatantly unconstitutional. He also said in his almost 40 years on the court, he's never seen such an easy legal call. He implemented a 14-day preliminary injunction. That means that in a few weeks, the parties will submit additional briefing and he will look at this question again. I don't expect that his decision will change. I think the last thing I want to get to is this question of, well, what if this comes before the Supreme Court? This is a conservative court. Will they say, well, President Trump tried to issue this executive order and will they essentially defer to him? A couple of responses. One, there is, in my view, a difference between being a conservative legal scholar and being a conservative politician. So I don't think we should expect that just because this is a policy by the Trump administration, that the Supreme Court, even though there are three members appointed by President Trump, that the Supreme Court just blesses that. The other thing is, this is a court that are largely made up of originalists. They look at the original meaning behind the Constitution at the time that the words were written. And again, I think our original understanding of these words is that it does not matter what the status of your parents are. If you're born in this country, you're a citizen. So obviously, it's very difficult to predict exactly what the Supreme Court will say. And I'm in no way saying this is what they will do, full stop. I have no questions. I'm saying I suspect that what they will do is rely on precedent and our many, many decades of interpretation, but we never know for sure until the case gets to the court. So that is my quick summary of the legal questions around birthright citizenship. And now on to my conversation with Megan. Welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm thrilled to say that we are joined by Megan Leibowitz. She's a political reporter covering breaking news for NBC News. She's based in Washington, D.C., which is obviously the epicenter of the political world. She's covered the White House, political campaigns, and Congress. Her reporting has touched on a myriad of issues, including national defense, U.S. foreign policy, court battles, unions, abortion politics. It's hard to think of more hot button topics. And Megan, I'm so glad that you're here today and that you can join us for an episode of Passing Judgment.
Thanks so much for reaching out. I'm excited to chat.
So we are recording this episode at the end of the first week of the second Trump administration. And I think the news has largely, in my view, been dominated by the executive orders that have been issued. There have been executive orders on birthright citizenship. I've certainly spent a good deal of my last few days talking about those in the area of immigration, DEI, transgender rights. I mean, really executive orders in virtually every area, energy, in the environment. Megan, could you highlight for us a few that you think are important for us to be thinking about?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, to take a step back here, it's really interesting to take a look at the scale of these executive orders and actions. He signed dozens this time around in his first few days in office, compared to, if you look back to 2017 during his first day in office, then he only signed one executive order on his first day of office. So it's a pretty exponential shift from that first time around to now. And a lot of the executive orders and executive actions that he's signed in his first few days have been things that he's talked about a lot on the campaign trail. You mentioned birthright citizenship. That's something that he had criticized pretty often as he was part, as he was on the campaign trail. And later on, once he was elected, it's something that he again vowed to do on day one. That is facing court battles now, and it will likely be tied up in court for a bit of time. Another area that he has talked about wanting to do was pardoning January 6th defendants. It was unclear initially when he was on the campaign trail and shortly after he became president, you know, to what extent he would issue these pardons and grant commutations, whether he would exclude defendants who committed acts of violence against police officers. Now, his executive order, though, on his first day in office was a blanket act of clemency. It affected about 1,500 people who were given pardons, and he commuted the sentences of 14 people. And the key thing, I think, to think about here is that it was broad, and it impacted people who did commit acts of violence against police officers. And officers who defended the Capitol. And then a few other areas as well that he had talked about a lot on the campaign trail. He had talked about ending Biden-era border policies, ramping up border enforcement operations and deportation operations. And he'd also talked about drilling, ramping up energy production, even though energy production had been pretty high before he came into office as well.
I think it's so important, Megan, that you situated us in terms of the scale of these executive orders, because from my perspective, it really is a shock and awe approach. As you said, one executive order versus dozens. And I think it's important for us to remember this is not a typical day one, and that President Trump is making good on many campaign promises. I've heard a number of people be surprised by some of the executive orders, but in fact, in my view, all of them, and I believe I heard you say this as well, have been explicitly telegraphed to us in the campaign. Mm-hmm. So I don't at this moment see any sort of surprises in this bunch, do you?
No, I think that the area that some people were surprised about was to what extent he would do something like pardon January 6th defendants. Yes. But all of these are things that he had repeatedly talked about on the campaign and repeatedly vowed to, starting day one, start his priorities. And I think that that's exactly what we have been seeing.
So if we were to dive into some of the immigration-related executive orders, could you help us understand? I know this is an unfair ask, but for people who are listening and want to just, they're not going to read the executive orders mm-hmm. and want kind of the Cliff's Notes version of, other than the headline, which they know, which is crackdown on immigration or deportation, what are we really looking at? And I know you've previewed it for us a little bit in terms of these immigration related orders.
Sure. They've been pretty wide reaching. So a few, one, he restated the remain in Mexico policy. Now that is where asylum seekers must wait in Mexico until they're scheduled to appear before immigration judges in the U.S. He also has, he suspended refugee resettlement in the U.S. for now. And all of these, you know, could face court pushback, legal pushback. He's also sent the military to the border by declaring a national emergency along the border. He's designated cartels and migrant gangs as foreign terrorist organizations, which could ramp up certain legal actions that the administration could take against people who are purportedly in touch or involved in some way against them. And he also has ended the CBP-1 program, and as well as parole programs for Cubans, Haitians, and Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans as well.
And of course, that executive order has been challenged in court very quickly. The mm-hmm. latest for people listening is that a federal judge in Seattle just recently implemented a nationwide preliminary injunction saying that this executive order, at least for the short term, will not go into effect. The judge appointed by President Reagan said that he's never seen, I think, such a clear-cut legal question in his 40 years on the bench, and that this is, quote, blatantly unconstitutional. So mm-hmm. just a little legal background for the birthright citizenship there. And as you said, probably I think the surprise for people is that when it comes to January 6th, that the pardon was across the board, that it wasn't just for nonviolent people who were involved in storming the Capitol in a nonviolent way, but it was for absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
So we've talked about January 6th a little bit. We've talked about immigration, again, just really skimming the surface, but I think people want to get a sense of what's happening, and you absolutely have given that to us. Foreign policy. Foreign policy is an area where we know that presidents have broad power, particularly when presidents, as you said, use, you know, the magic words of emergency. As you mentioned, the president has declared an emergency at the border, and that allows him, obviously, to do things that you could not do in a quote-unquote normal time. But let's go to foreign policy for a little bit so people, I think, can just wrap their heads around what is happening in that area.
Sure. Well, a few areas that I would highlight there. Trump, throughout his campaign and during his first term, America First was his slogan, and he has been very vocal about wanting to act on that. And so he has criticized some international organizations and alliances that have been part of U.S. foreign policy perspectives for a very long time. So one of his first executive orders as well was saying that the U.S. would pull out of the Paris Climate Accord, which is something that he had tried to do at the tail end of his administration, of his first administration. And that was something that Biden had reversed. So he's trying to do that again this time around. He also announced that the U.S. would withdraw from the WHO. Now, that's significant because at the tail end of his last administration, obviously, was the COVID-19 pandemic. And the WHO plays a large role in information sharing and collaboration among different countries when dealing with crises like that as well. And so I think that those are the first two areas that come to mind that he's had executive orders on that I think really foreshadow what we might be able to expect from in the coming weeks and months ahead.
That's really helpful to think about because we are trying to obviously digest what just happened, but also to think through what's about to happen in the short term, the medium term, the long term. And I know that a number of public health officials have very strong feelings with respect to what's happening with the WHO. Could you talk to us a little bit about the intersection between public health and funding for higher education? I obviously work for a university, and I know that there's been some changes when it comes to funding for research and or grants in the area of public health, obviously beyond just leaving the World Health Organization, which is a separate issue.
Sure. So one area Trump has been talking a lot about as well is wanting to cut back funding for certain organizations and public schools as well that talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion or have some sort of organization or role related to that. And so he has, in his first few days in office, signed executive orders, I should say, related to trying to cut back on DEI and things of that nature. It's something that he's criticized a lot on the campaign trail as well. And then also related to the WHO, he has criticized it for its role in responding to COVID as well. And I think that that also really goes to relate back to his administration, his campaign talks about wanting to put America first and in many cases sort of withdraw from some of these international alliances, if that answers your question at all.
Yes, it does. Yes. And obviously, I don't expect any person to fully unpack all of the potential consequences of these executive orders, because as you laid out in the beginning, there are many of them in a way that there is no, as I understand it, there's no historical analog.
Mm-hmm.
Another area where we've touched on this, but President Trump explicitly telegraphed, here's what's going to happen when it comes to the economy, is tariffs.
Yeah.
And first, could we talk about tariffs? Where are we? Have we implemented them? Against who? How much? And then I'd love to talk a little bit more about the economy in relation to environmental concerns.
Sure. So for tariffs, something that he had said, it was after he was elected in late November, he said that he would impose a 25% blanket tariff on Mexico and Canada. And that's notable because both are U.S. allies and big trading partners of the U.S. He said that he would do that on his first day in office, and that is not something that we have seen yet. It's not to say that it won't happen at some point down the line, but it did not happen in his first day in office. And tariffs are, it's been a hot topic because many economists have been critical of what tariffs could mean for U.S. consumers. Several economists have said that high tariffs could eventually pass the cost on to U.S. consumers. Effectively, one economist that my colleagues at NBC have spoken to, it's called it a sales tax on U.S. consumers, that it could really ramp up the costs for Americans as opposed to other countries effectively paying for these tariffs. He's also been pretty vocal about wanting to increase tariffs on China. Now, he has not done that on his first day in office as well, but that's an area that we are going to continue to keep an eye on.
Right, because the impact on the economy would obviously be enormous. We are not accustomed to tariffs of that size. And again, another campaign promise that President Trump explicitly telegraphed for us. What about where the economy bumps up against the environment?
Yeah.
And specifically, well, I think it sounds like you can take it from there, but I'm thinking of drill, baby, drill. I'm thinking of electric car credits. Obviously, I'm having this conversation with you from Los Angeles. California has tried all these different ways to try and incentivize people to get rid of their cars that use gas or even hybrids and move to all electric. So is that forced? What's happening? Where are we?
Sure. So if starting with the electric vehicles, that's been a hot topic. And it's something that he's painted with a pretty broad brush on the campaign trail by referring to what he calls electric vehicle mandates. I should note that no one is mandated to buy a certain type of car, but it seems that what he is referring to are certain policies that can promote the manufacturing and production of electric vehicles. And so he had said that on day one that he would revoke Biden's policies related to electric vehicles. And it's something that he has signed a policy that basically undoes things that he thinks are favoring electric vehicles, which means ending certain state emissions waivers, subsidies that he says favor electric vehicles. Another area as well, you mentioned drill, baby, drill. That became a slogan on his campaign trail for quite a while. One of his other first executive orders was signing an order that did things such as prioritizing the development of Alaska's liquid natural gas potential. It also, he deregulated Biden-era policies that could have limited energy projects in the state, is the view of the Trump administration. One area as well, he also declared a national energy emergency. Now, that in effect instructs agency heads to, in part, to facilitate the production of domestic energy resources, to prioritize that. And by domestic energy resources, some of the areas that he, of course, is referring to are oil and natural gas.
So, Megan, I hear you very clearly laying out another major area where we see not changes via legislation, but again, everything we're talking about right now, we're talking about executive orders. We haven't even seen legislation go through this administration yet because it's just too young. Certainly, there's proposed legislation, but we know that one of the things that presidents can do via executive order is kind of reorganize the federal government, obviously implement changes, clarify existing statutes, declare national emergencies, implement new foreign policy. And I want to focus on the first thing I said, which is kind of organize the federal government, implementing mm-hmm. new policies. I'm talking about the area of transgender rights. And I think there might be some confusion about exactly what President Trump did and exactly what he can do with these executive orders.
Right. So executive orders can be challenged in court. When it comes to transgender rights of transgender people, that's an area that on the campaign trail he had frequently criticized. So one of his executive orders on his first day was he made it a U.S. policy to only recognize two sexes, male and female. And now sex is not the same thing as gender, but transgender people have been a frequent target of the Trump administration. Another area that this kind of overlaps with, too, is diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in the U.S. government. Now, it's an area that Biden had put energy in. He had signed on his first day in office back in 2021, one of the areas that he signed was he directed the government to conduct equity assessments and consult with underrepresented communities regarding U.S. federal government efforts. And so Trump now in his first few days of office is really trying to roll a lot of these diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility efforts back. His view has been that they are discriminatory. And so that's an area that he immediately on his first day signed actions and executive orders related to rolling back some of these Biden era policies. In one of Trump's first executive orders, he had referred to Biden's actions regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion as, quote, illegal and immoral discrimination programs, end of quote. So that gives you a sense as to what we might be able to expect moving forward as well from the Trump administration.
It does. And this is one of those examples where I don't want to say typical in a sense that underplays people's feelings about the impact of these orders, but typical only in the sense that one administration will implement via executive order changes, for instance, in how we interpret federal legislation, and the next administration will come in and overturn those changes. And I think there are a lot of areas where we can see legal challenges of, can you do this by executive order? But it certainly is the case that, at least with respect to the pattern of the next administration undoing what the previous administration does, that certainly does have a historic analog. Could you help us understand what it means if the policy of the U.S. government is that there's only two sexes? What does that mean in practice for people?
It's still a bit up in the air as to what the ramifications could ultimately end up being. Now, the Biden administration had allowed people on passports to put their gender down as X instead of male or female. And so it is to be seen how, to what extent these executive orders could impact people's travel documentations and things of that nature as well.
Megan, you've really helped us go through a lot of these executive orders. I mean, there's so much to process, and you've really digested it and summarized it in a helpful way. I'd love to dive into something that you just wrote about, which is the headline is Trump suggests Ukraine shouldn't have fought back against Russia. So we were talking about the executive orders. We did talk about foreign policy. We've talked about the Ukraine. And I just want to give you a moment, because I know this is the most recent piece that you wrote, to talk in a little bit more detail about what President Trump actually suggested in an interview, what he's really trying to telegraph to Ukraine and to Russia.
Sure. So his comments came during a Fox News interview that was taped Wednesday, and then this portion of the interview aired yesterday. Now, just to put this back in context, just take a step back for a bit. Trump has long said that he will negotiate an end to the war in Ukraine within 24 hours. Now, that has not happened yet. There's currently no indication that the war is winding down in any sort of way. He has also previously criticized Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, saying that the war's end should have been negotiated. Now, in his comments on Wednesday, though, he was laying out the difference between the military the capabilities of Russia, a much larger country, and Ukraine. And he said that Zelensky was fighting, and these are his words, Zelensky was fighting a much bigger entity, much bigger and much more powerful. He shouldn't have done that because we could have made a deal. So he didn't explicitly say that that Ukraine should not have fought back, but it seemed to indicate that he thinks that Ukraine should have handled the war differently when Russia invaded. Now, we reached out to the White House to see what they said about how Trump thinks that Zelensky should have handled the war when Russia invaded, and we have not received a response yet. But the war started because Russia invaded Ukraine. Now, in his comments on Wednesday, he indicated that he thought that Zelensky wanted to fight. Trump said that he himself, Trump, could have made the deal, quote, so easily. But then he went on to say that Zelensky decided that he wanted to fight. So it's forecasts the relationship that we could see more of between the U.S. and Ukraine and Russia, and to what extent Trump is actually able to end the war like he had been promising on the campaign trail is really up in the air.
And I think we're likely going to see more of this approach, not just in Ukraine and Russia, but also, as you said, the America First, I can make a deal approach with respect to a lot of countries and what's happening. I think certainly President Trump has taken some credit for the release of hostages in the Middle East that occurred in the waning hours of the Biden administration. So we're going to have to, like all things, wait and see what happens next. But I'm hoping you can help us with that, because I'm trying to think through a lot of changes that are happening, as we talked about, via executive order, and thinking about ways that the structure of the federal government is changing, and ways that our policy is changing, and ways that our understanding of existing laws are changing. But you are at the epicenter, and you're covering breaking news and political news, and you have experience covering the White House. So I'm hoping you can tell us, what are some things on your kind of short-term horizon that you think, even though we're awash in information, that we should be paying attention to?
Sure. Well, the proliferation of news, of constant news, has been extremely interesting to watch. It's really been, for lack of a better term, like a fire hose of news, just the proliferation of executive orders and executive actions that we've seen, dozens of them, within the first few days of his presidency. And I think that one area that I'm interested in watching is, you know, is this going to simmer out? Or is this going to be, you know, what we can expect for the next 4 years, the shape in which Trump is, the tempo at which he is trying to reshape the government and policies in ways that he has talked about on the campaign trail. Another area that my colleagues and I have been watching is how Trump has responded to people he perceives to be his political adversaries. And what I mean by that is that there have been instances in recent days, including today, of the White House revoking security details for people who have had them because they have faced threats to their life in some ways. So people I'm thinking of are Dr. Anthony Fauci, John Bolton, and these are people who have had a target on their back by adversaries of the U.S. and adversaries of their policies. Another area as well is that he has revoked security clearances of people he perceives who have gone against him in a certain way. I'm thinking of people who had signed a letter related to Hunter Biden. And he, and this is something that Trump was very critical of, people signing this letter, and has revoked security clearances of people. He has also taken down the portrait of General Milley. And so you can sort of see this trend of how he has been responding to people who have criticized him in some way. And that's an area that we're going to have to continue to watch to see to what extent that continues.
Well, that's right. I mean, this is my endless question, which is, how much is an aberration? How much is the beginning of a pattern? Mm-hmm. Both with internally, with respect to the new Trump administration, and even much broader with respect to our country. I mean, how much are our precedents being changed in ways that we might not have anticipated? And how much is President Trump just fundamentally changing the way we think of a president exerting executive power? And you've certainly helped us to think through all of the things that happen. As you said, I'm loath to use this example because I'm speaking to everybody from Los Angeles, but it is like drinking water from a fire hydrant. Mm-hmm. And I hope you'll come back and unpack more, and maybe we can just dive into one of the executive orders next time. But this was a great summary of everything that's happening.
It was great chatting with you. Thanks so much for having me.